You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay. Millie.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast. And oh boy, we got a good one today. We're the Raina Jays. It's all three of us, me, Mass Lives, John Corrales, along with Jay King of The Athletic, and a third, Samuel Jamison Packard III.
Jam!
Also known as Ladies Love Cool Jam.
I got a question for you, Corrales.
Yeah.
How often or how long did it take you to think of the opener for today's show? We got a good one for you today.
You know, it was an organic moment, Jay. I don't have to think about things like that. I just let things happen from the heart.
Right, Jay got bored so quickly and came with the comments.
Yeah. Jay's coming at my neck for no reason whatsoever because whatever. That's fine. That we're already setting the combative tone. I will say that a lot of people are talking about whether this podcast is better without Jay King. I keep telling them no, but the conversation just won't stop. But
wow. Wow. Am I Kyrie?
I mean, it's kind of a backhanded compliment. We refuse to talk about that topic, but we're going to answer your mailbag questions. Raining Jays, raining junk. So many questions coming at us. So if we're ready, Jay King, are you prepared? Are you ready to go for this?
I've been ready my whole life.
Yeah. All right. I'm doing my best to get through most of these questions. I apologize if we can't get to all of them, but breaking them up into various categories, we're going to start with Anthony Davis trade questions.
Woo-woo!
From at the What's Update. Very serious and not silly question. In the hypothetical world where we get Anthony Davis, but have to trade Smarf for contract filler, how hard will the Celtics Twitter take it? Do we disband after the loss of our king? Is that threat level midnight?
That was a Raining Junk question to start. But after Marcus Smart today proclaimed his love for Boston, both on Instagram and Twitter, I think it'd be the Celtics fans would be upset, but then they'd quickly be distracted by all the winning. So, I mean, Marcus Smart clearly is like the heart and soul of the fan base as well. And so everyone would just immediately become Pelicans fans, as I assume most Celtics fans are now Denver Nugget fans. But I think the winning would cure everything.
I've got I need to get something off my chest. Are we just going to have 5 months about Anthony Davis speculation? Like, I know it's going to be out there, but I am very against answering any questions about Anthony Davis talk. There will be so much time after this season to talk about Anthony Davis. Let's just keep the focus on the Celtics, who are very talented and very capable and have a chance to win the Eastern Conference this season without Anthony Davis, who is currently playing in a game for the Pelicans, which is very, very bizarre to me. But yes, Smarf is beloved.
Jay,
Smarf is beloved. Here, here.
This is the whole concept of a mailbag. People ask us questions, and then
we get to answer what we want. We don't have to.
No, I agree with Jay on this point. There's a lot of good, like, interesting playoff talk we can talk about. There's no need to feel like we've talked about Anthony Davis for 3 weeks.
But yeah, we could talk about Al Horford kicking ass.
But there are.
I have my own mailbag question writing in from. This is from Jam Packard. Is Al Horford the most important player in the Eastern Conference playoffs?
Yes. You see, this is how you structure a podcast. You get some of these things out of the way first and then get to the next questions because there's buyout questions. There's Kyrie questions.
There's playoff questions. There's Gordon Hayward questions. There's a ton of questions to get to.
I'm boycotting the Anthony Davis questions the rest of the way.
Okay. See, the
no
reason-
lie. If we answer another Anthony Davis question, I'll hang up.
Okay, great. So the reason why I wanted to put this out there was because I don't think Marcus Smart has to be filler. And
yeah, we got 5 months to talk about it, man. Let's just move on.
For Matt Jovian Shadow, if we could trade for either, would you prefer Anthony Davis or Zion?
Zion's dope. Anthony Davis is dope. Marcus Smart is dope.
Zion can crush a basketball with his hand.
Yes.
So that's pretty cool.
This one from Matt Pedro CC. I need the Celtics trade mock-up for Anthony Davis from each one of you guys. Not the dream one. The realistic
one. People want Anthony Davis talk.
Jay, do you have a realistic trade mock-up for Anthony Davis?
He's going to hang up. Did he hang up? Oh, my God. That'd be hilarious.
He actually did hang up. He did hang up.
All right. I'll give my answer. Gordon Hayward, Jason Tatum, and some picks. Or you don't want to give that. Gordon Hayward, Jaylen Brown, and some picks. Or if you want to give up Smart, it's Smart and then one of those two young guys. If you give up, you might have to take Solomon Hill back. But
that's my question here. I know we've got 5 months to talk about this, but for right now, just to get these questions out of the way, I don't think, and this goes along with the Marcus Smart thing, I don't think they have to trade Marcus Smart. And this will lead into our buyout questions. I think the Celtics are going to use the buyout market to get trade filler. So if it's complicated, if they say you have to take Solomon Hill back or you're not getting Anthony Davis, that complicates things. I think the Celtics can do it with a Tatum, Brown, Robert Williams centered trade with those three main talented pieces as the player parts. I think you can do it with the Memphis pick and other picks. You throw Semi Ojeleye in there, and then you throw in, I think the key thing to remember when it comes to the Anthony Davis trade is because when it has to be executed, if the Celtics are making draft picks this year, the Celtics can't trade the pick before the draft. It can't be executed till after July. And those draft picks the Celtics make are going to count towards the salary because you have to make the picks, sign the picks, and trade them. So right now, Tatum, Brown, Williams, and Ojeleye for Anthony Davis comes up about $8.5 million short. You sign a guy right now for the taxpayer mid-level, whomever that is in the buyout market, that's $5.3 million. That leaves you $3.1 million short. If you make two draft picks in the mid to late draft, that's enough to match the salary. And then so we'll see what happens from there. That's my most realistic trade at the moment. Jay King has actually hung up, and I am in no way calling him back. So
I respect the move. He gave us a strict guideline, and he's holding to it.
He's holding to it. Jay King has requested a trade out of this podcast, and I'm the Pelicans calling his bluff, and that's it. So, all right, moving on to the buyout market question. At never rhyme, but all of the E's are threes. So feel like the Celtics missed a huge opportunity to reunite the Morris brothers. Who are you disappointed the Celtics didn't sign during the first week of the buyout?
No one. I mean, kind of Markieff Morris. I don't think he would have played at all because I don't think they have minutes for a buyout market. But it's not like there's any other buyout guys who are like, damn, the Celtics really should have got him.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's the buyout market, for as much talk as there was about it, there's like hasn't been much movement. So I don't know. What? I'm not desperate. I mean, I think if they can get Robin Lopez in terms of a guy who can actually like be basically Bane's insurance, I would like it. But after that, I think you're right. It's just going to be some guy they're going to pay who's not going to play.
Yeah. Let me just rip off a few more of these buyout questions from @AsSam. Who would the Celtics, consider Carmelo Anthony for their last roster spot? That's a hard no.
No.
That's the hardest no I could possibly give you. At Trainer Ryan 22, upset that we missed out on any significant buyout candidate so far. And at Celtics Guatemala, at Celtics GT, we might need to fill our empty roster spot with someone who could be used to get Anthony Davis in the offseason. What kind of player should we search in the buyout market? So that's
one who will get paid.
That's it.
Keith Bogans. Sign Keith Bogans again.
Keith Bogans.
Jay King from the top
rope. King is back. Swooping in.
Keith Bogans, baby.
Yeah, that's exactly the type of player that we kind of need. But ideally, it would be somebody like Robin Lopez who could play if we need him to, but would, if he was cool, not playing for a few games. The problem is all of these guys want to play a few games. Like Enos Kanter, I was never in on Enos Kanter, but he went to Portland because he wants to play. He wants minutes, and the Celtics don't have minutes to give these guys.
That's why Wayne Ellington went to Detroit, so he could be bad.
Yeah. He was not good against the Celtics, but they want minutes. That's a thing.
The Celtics just don't have minutes for anyone, including Markieff Morris, who I think has a chance to be one of the few buyout guys who really makes an impact during the playoffs.
Big pickup for OKC. I think it's a huge pickup for them.
I go back and forth between whether the Celtics should want another center. And the only reason I say that they might, or I think that they might, is if Baines gets hurt again, or if Horford gets hurt, like Embiid is just such an imposing matchup. And he's like, can Tice handle him? He did a pretty good job the other night, but
no, Tice can't handle him.
Having a big bulky dude might be helpful, but then again, maybe Tice is just better than whatever big bulky dude you could put out there, and said big bulky dude would give up more than
it's Robin Lopez or bust. Like, what other fives are out there? I don't think Dwayne Dedman's going to get bought out. I don't, like, Gortat is not someone you want to sign. I don't know who else you're going to get that's, like, actually worth playing, other than just someone with a big body. Just go with a Time Lord. At least he'll jump.
He will jump.
Man, that guy loves jumping. Loves jumping.
He's very into jumping. So that's the buyout market. Don't expect anything. Don't expect any big names. And this is kind of like more star-studded, that's not the right word, buyout market. There are more recognizable names on this buyout market. None of them are going to come to the Celtics. That's just not how it's going to go. Seriously, Jay was joking, but the Keith Bogans type of contract is exactly what the Celtics need. They should just sign one of us for that. I'll sit there and not just pay me the money, and then you can trade me and they can waive me and I'd be happy.
It's every single G leaguer would be ready to murder you if that was the case.
Well,
I just need Keith Bogans NBA back.
Yeah.
I need him back. The man got banished from the Celtics.
Yeah, he did. Well, I mean, he wanted to play. So, I mean, I'm not going to get that mad at the guy for being like, I don't want to just sit here. I want to play basketball. And they were like, We'd rather just have you just go home than be disruptive, but I'm not going to get mad at the guy for wanting to play basketball.
Can we just state that Keith Bogans is the reason the Celtics got loaded up? Because Keith Bogans was willing to agree to the sign and trade and get super overpaid.
Yeah.
So yeah. Keith Bogans.
No, it's absolutely true. It's
I think we need
true.
To credit the entire Celtics rebuild to Keith Bogans.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty good piece. Like that.
He gets a taco. Bogans gets a retroactive taco.
Bogans gets the Danny Ainge Chipotle black card for the taco truck, just for that.
Ooh, unlimited tacos.
Yeah. I mean, if he doesn't agree to that, does the deal fall apart? Maybe. That's worth it.
Bogans, man.
A quick Isaiah Thomas question at Landing Kyle. Do you see a reunion with Isaiah Thomas if Kyrie or Terry leaves? I bring it up because Isaiah made his debut last night and he hit a big three-pointer to give the Nuggets a lead, and they won by two. And it was a really great story. Just to answer all of the Isaiah Thomas questions, I don't know if you guys have a different opinion, but I think his days in Boston are just done. They're just done. And it sucks in some ways because it was so great, but he's just never going to have that role here. If Kyrie leaves, and the other thing is, if Kyrie leaves, just flat out just leaves for like the Knicks or the Clippers or whatever, the Celtics don't just have that money to spend. They're still going to be over the cap, so they're not going to be able to sign anybody. That's what makes Kyrie Irving so important in re-signing him and trading for Anthony Davis to kind of guarantee all that, very important. So that's a real no to any sort of Isaiah Thomas reunion.
Yeah, I'm going to say that there's a very, very, very small likelihood of that. One, because nobody knows right now what Isaiah Thomas is going to be. I know he scored some points in his debut, but nobody knows whether that hip will hold up. Nobody knows whether he'll have his burst again. Nobody knows if he'll be a helpful player. And then, you know, Kyrie, I still think he'll probably stay. And Rozier, what are you doing, Jam?
I'm sipping on a fine lager, wondering if they're going to play the tribute video for Isaiah on March 18th.
I think they are.
Yeah, you know it's maybe. Sitting on some video guy's file right now. It's been made. They're desperate to play it. I think they have to. It's been if they don't play it, it would be upsetting.
That would be nice. He was beloved, just like Marcus Smart is beloved. A lot of beloved guys.
Very beloved.
It is cool. It was cool to see Isaiah back in action, man. It's been very a cool. long, slow grind for that guy. He's been trying to work his way out of his hip issues basically since the playoffs, since he dragged the Celtics to the Eastern Conference Finals and was scoring 50 and had 28 and 12 in game 7 of the second round and was just an absolute boss throughout that entire season. So it was cool to see him back on the court.
Yes, very, very cool. At your boy knows what's it's about a Kyrie question here. And the sad and off chance Kyrie leaves in the summer, should the Celtics re-sign Rozier if his price is over $18 million a year, or should they let Hayward and Horford run more points / trade some picks to get someone like Jrue Holiday, Conley, Rubio, Dragic, blah, 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 blah.
What team is giving Terry Rozier $18 million a year?
In this offseason, I don't know. Maybe in last offseason somebody would have. But this offseason, it's going to be tough for him to get that kind of money. But the Celtics, I don't know. It's one of those weird scenarios. Like, I don't know if it's going to turn into like one of the Jeff Green scenario where they didn't want to give Jeff Green, I think, the contract that they gave him, but they kind of had to because they had no cap space and they had bird rights. And you just got to give the guy the money and hope that he develops into the guy that you need, because otherwise you just don't have the money to go get somebody else that you need. Are they going to get Jrue Holiday? I don't think the Pelicans want to trade Holiday. Conley is kind of on the older side. I mean, maybe, but all of those other guys are not great options, or it's going to take a lot to get them. So, and Holiday makes a ton of money. Conley makes a ton of money. So just matching the salary for those guys makes it very difficult. I can see a world in a worst case scenario with Kyrie leaving that they try to make a run and re-sign or at least match Terry Rozier. And because he's restricted, they could drive down the market and re-sign Rozier for like a 2-year deal, 2 or 3 year deal at more reasonable money. Definitely not 18.
I think the timing on it makes a lot of difference. Like if he signs an offer sheet the first day and you don't know about Kyrie, it creates an interesting situation. But who knows? It's similar to let's be fair, guys. That's similar to the Anthony Davis question. That's 5 months from now.
It is very similar to the Anthony Davis question. I think they'll know about Kyrie by then because they'll know about Anthony Davis by then and blah, blah, blah. At the risk of J. King hanging up again, I think that's absolutely true. Let's get to some playoff questions before J. King loses his shit here. At Jake Salmon 13, considering the moves the Eastern Conference contenders made, would anything less than the finals still make this season feel like a failure for Boston? J. King.
Yes.
Still yes, finals or bust?
Yeah, I think it would feel like a failure if they don't make the finals. I mean, this is a team that reached Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals last year, got back Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward, and probably has as much depth as it will have during whatever type of run this becomes. Like, this is a really, really deep team with good NBA players everywhere. I know the Eastern Conference is really tough, and I know that two good teams are going to be sent home in the second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs and be really pissed off. And their season is going to feel like a failure because they had high hopes and realistic high hopes and couldn't do it. And it it's very possible that the Celtics don't reach the finals. And there are a lot of, there are three other really good teams in the East, but I do think it's a failure if they don't do that. I do think that this, things have been building to this year, and if the Celtics don't get a chance to compete against the Warriors in the finals, then they'll have fallen short of their own expectations, the external expectations, and their potential. And so, yes, it would be a failure. It would.
I'm not so sold on it being a failure if they don't get to the finals. But I do think the Celtics, and they proved this a little bit against Philly, that they are so uniquely built, even with all of their problems.
Okay. Let's say this had been the beginning of the season, preseason, and you heard the Sixers had traded what they did for Butler and Harris, and you know what you knew the Raptors got Marc Gasol, and you were told, or you had the foresight to predict that the Bucks would mesh into a regular season powerhouse. At that point, before your own expectations were lowered,
do we also know that Gordon Hayward's just wasn't going to be good for 3 months?
Yeah, see that's I get your question, Jay. But
given expectations, I understand. But the Kawhi Hayward thing is a monkey wrench.
Yeah, you guys both predicted 60 plus wins for this.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I'll sit here and I'll tell you that
I predicted 60 plus wins last night.
I'm willing to admit that I did not take into account. I did not think that Gordon Hayward would be this far off, and I understand why he's this far off. And so it's my own fault for putting that expectation on him. Like, that's me. I didn't expect the chemistry issues. Like, I didn't expect Tatum and Brown to come in and be looking for their own offense as much as they were. And I didn't expect that kind of chemistry to take a longer time to mesh. Like, I didn't expect Jaylen Brown to have to go to the bench to find his groove. So before the season, no, I wouldn't have thought that. I would have thought like the Celtics were still good enough. And I still think the Celtics are good enough, but I also understand that I was wrong about a few things, and certain realities are not what I expected them to be. So, but looking at the East, I think the Celtics will have a very strong chance to get to the finals. But at the same time, I can see a 7-game series where maybe Marc Gasol swings a game 7, or maybe Nikola Mirotic happens to get hot and swing a game 7.
Or what if Giannis just goes insane? I think if they get bounced from the second round, it's an absolute failure. Like, they have to make the Eastern Conference Finals. I think the thing where I'm a level down from it's a failure is, like, really anything can happen in basketball. I think the teams are so close that I just want them to play in a very competitive Eastern Conference Finals. And like, if Giannis just takes over and plays, I'm the MVP and I'm just going to be the best goddamn player, and there's nothing the Celtics can do about it, annoying. But I don't think it's a failure of a season if they lose to the Bucks in 7.
But I just want to push back on the notion of setting what is a failure or not right now. Because what if the Celtics go and play one of these teams? What if they play Toronto or Milwaukee and the Celtics play an awesome series? If we can sit there and say the Celtics played great in this series and Toronto or Milwaukee played better, and that happens to be in the second round.
So you'd be happy, or if you're the Celtics, it wouldn't be a failure if you're just not good enough?
It's not.
If you spent years building this team and you're just not good enough, that's not a failure to you?
It's a little bit of a failure to not be good enough at this point, but I don't know. I think moving forward, you're the next step. There's still a next step. Like, I still feel like because they're pursuing Anthony Davis, that they don't see this as the final product. If other teams make moves that make them better than you And if everything comes together, if the Celtics play exactly the way they're supposed to play, if the Celtics reach our expectations and play the way they're supposed to play in the second round.
And but the way they're supposed to play, if the Celtics play like their best basketball they can, they should make the finals. Like that
they
means
should.
Gordon Hayward is playing. So there's no scenario where the Celtics meet all expectations and then lose because there's, expectations are
really.
I think they should make the finals.
There's no scenario where Giannis Antetokounmpo goes completely bonkers
not that and the Celtics are like full erotic city. Gordon Hayward playing great, Kyrie playing great, Horford playing great. Like,
no, I agree that full erotic city Celtics get to the finals. I agree, but what if they don't? What if they play that way and they don't? Is that a failure?
Yeah, then Erotic City has lied to us.
I'm not even saying that. I don't even know if they're the Eastern Conference favorite right now. Like, I think the Bucks have had such.
I don't think they're the favorite either. I just think like the possibility of like if Hayward comes back and is healthy and plays at his level, I think the Celtics have such crazy depth and like there was a reason people picked them for 60 wins. It wasn't just complete homerism. Like they do have, I think an incredibly high ceiling is like if Hayward comes back healthy. But I think kind of where they stand right now, the Bucks have been the best team in the league, at least like statistically, and they absolutely should be the favorite.
Now, all that said, I don't believe in the Bucks completely. So I think
Al Horford's going to play Brook Lopez right off the court.
Yeah, I think there's a strong possibility that if Al Horford is healthy and plays the way he did against Philly, then that negates a lot of what Milwaukee relies on. It negates a lot of what Toronto's been able to do, and obviously negates a lot of what Philly does.
Who's the most dangerous team for the Celtics? Like, who do they definitely not want to see in the second round?
I think the Raptors are the most dangerous against them.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, they're deep, and they could just do so many different things. And
they're
Kawhi,
like the Celtics.
We haven't talked about
Kawhi. Versatility is like the Celtics. Like they have all those long switchy pieces, and they have centers who are two-way players, and as good as the Bucks are, I have questions about them. Like you guys said, Lopez, does he get played off the court? Giannis, if he has to play center for the majority of the series, like can their other wings hold up? Does Nikola Mirotic get targeted all the time? How much does he
also
get into that constant pressure?
Can you just scheme Giannis? Like, I feel like the Celtics did a pretty good job in last year's playoffs of just.
I don't think you can scheme Giannis. That dude's a beast.
He's gonna get his. But if you just like, basically play him to drive every single time and stick on shooters and just make him beat you. I mean, there's no way to stop him down. He had a great quote about it the other day. Did you see the quote Giannis had about Thad Young?
Yeah. Yeah, he was like, yeah, Thad.
He was
young
very. He's a great player.
Thad Young.
No, he was so complimentary because Giannis is the nicest guy in the league. But he's like,
but at the same
Thad
time,
Young is a fantastic player. I love Thad Young. He gives a lot of effort. He does fantastic defense. But there's no one in the league who can stop me. You have to double team me. I will play make and I will get points. And it was the best Giannis quote I've ever seen.
That's pretty good. That's a good one. All right, let's quickly before we take a break, because we're going to be going for like 4 hours the way we're going right now. Alex Mesa Sports, what's the percentage chance of the Celtics making the finals in your opinion? Put a percentage on it. Jay.
30%.
Ooh.
30 after all that, you're saying the season's going to be a disappointment.
No, I'm saying there's a 30% chance they reach the finals. I think it's hard as hell.
That was higher than I thought Jay King was actually going to go.
I think it's hard as hell to win playoff series on the road. And they're probably going to have to do it two times to reach the finals. So, 30. We'll go with 30.
I wasn't going to go much higher than that. I think it's like a 40% chance. I just think that East is very good. I was trying to think today about like how much the road makes an impact and like what would be the preferred path for the Celtics. Like, I don't think they have a chance of catching the Raptors in the two. And so if they're a three seed, it's like, one, do you want to play the Brooklyn Nets in the first round when they got like LeVert back and clearly have played the Celtics well, or you'd rather play the Pacers or maybe the Sixers at this point. I don't understand how the Pacers keep winning. It doesn't make any sense to me, but I don't know. Do you think the road really matters that much? Like, logically to me, it doesn't make any sense, but then we saw last year where they just couldn't win a game in the road in the playoffs, and like role players clearly just don't shoot as well. So like, in my head, I don't want to believe it, but like everything else points to, yeah, it's very difficult to win road playoff series.
Very, very difficult. Which is why I think, and it's why that 10-10 start really has weighed them down, because that 10-10 start, obviously, you know, there are a lot of reasons why they took a long time to start rolling, but they played really well for a while now, and they're still going to be on the road for probably at least the second two series if they get to the third series. So, I don't know. I'm fascinated by the Celtics team because I still think they're the deepest team with good players, and I still think they have the fewest weak links to target among all the Eastern Conference contenders. Like, both sides, they have guys who can hurt you at every position.
And they're damn good when the games actually matter. It feels like they have one of those bad habits of like playing down to your opponent, but
yeah. But some of that I think has been they've played a lot of the good teams at home, and like they've been just a miserable road team, and a lot of those games have been at home. Obviously, the Philly win was really impressive, but they haven't played Milwaukee on the road yet. They haven't played. They lost to Toronto the only time they played them on the road. They haven't played the Warriors on the road. They haven't played. They lost to the Nuggets on the road.
But they play much better basketball in those games. I'm not saying that like. Like, clearly, them being at home is an advantage, but in terms of, like, turning it up a notch, like, the Celtics clearly have different levels of effort and energy, and I feel like that it's something they can do in the playoffs. Like, we've seen LeBron James-led teams basically just coast for the entire year, and then when it came time to be intense, like, really turn it on. I don't know. I think they have definitely have an ability to do that, but I don't know. Well, I think the second half of the season, when they have to go on their West Coast swing and when they have to play Milwaukee and Toronto on the road, it's going to be interesting tests for them to see basically if they want any chance of catching Toronto in the two seed. They basically have to like sweep all those tough games. They have to like really go on a run because they basically were home for all of January.
All right.
The other factor for the Celtics, Al Horford is such an advantage to have against Joel Embiid. And not that he's in such an advantage over Embiid, but among all guys, like, he just gives Embiid problems at both ends. And he's such an advantage against Brook Lopez. I don't think Brook Lopez can stay on the court. And so Al Horford, I think, will be a huge, huge difference for them in the playoffs, especially if he stays as healthy as he has been and as good as he has been lately. He's been just dominant the last couple games.
The more that I think about it, it's like 75-80% chance Celtics make the finals.
And I want to see Kyrie in the playoffs without LeBron. Like, Kyrie is a killer in the playoffs.
Yeah. I'm going to say it's a 40% chance that, you know, considering that there are three other teams that are very good, that I'm going to say that it's a 40% chance, but I do believe in the Celtics matchups that they're going to get to the finals. All right, let's take a break.
Did you just say 40% chance, and then you just said, I do believe they're going to get to the finals?
Believe and chances are completely different. I believe 100% they're going to get to the finals, but like if you're talking realistically, it's 40%.
All right, I was just curious there.
Yeah. No, okay. So it's a 40% chance. I think they can do it. I think they can. 40% is a good chance. I think the 40% will pay off, I guess.
You know, growth mindset teaches that it's a 100% chance that they can, because they have to believe in positive thinking.
We're going to take a break. This is already a podcast-length segment. We're going to take a break. We got Gordon Hayward questions. We got Marcus Smart questions. We got other random questions.
Yeah, we
got
to hurry that up.
We got random.
I got things to do tonight.
No, you don't, Jay.
I got to spend Valentine's Day alone.
Yeah, you got a ton to do tonight. All right, so let's take a break here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. We'll be right back. Let's jump back into the mailbag here. Gordon Hayward questions from at Teeps34 is whether or not Gordon Hayward can return to form the determining factor in how far the season can go this year. Not his fault, but in my opinion, he's been holding the team back for a lot of games this season.
Big time X factor, that Gordon there.
He is. And has been holding the team back. I guess
big
you
time.
Can say.
I'm going to say big time on that one as well.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess you want to frame it that way. But the way I've been saying it all along is they have to play him. And yes, he's been, if he was just a guy that wasn't hurt and playing this way, then he wouldn't have kept those minutes. But I think we've seen over the past five games that the minutes are paying off. And so to answer the question is whether or not if he can return to form the determining factor, it's a huge factor. It's a very huge factor. Maybe not the determining factor, but it's a very big factor. If he can return to form, then he significantly changes. And Sam, to your point from last night, like the Raptors, the Bucks,
Sixers.
Thank you.
What a joke of a team, though.
Yes. They all made moves. But if the Celtics can trade the early season Gordon Hayward for the old Gordon Hayward, and or at least some close version of him, then that changes a lot of what the Celtics are doing. Because not only does that make him a very good player who can do a lot of good things, it also sets other guys into their roles a little bit more, because no one's saying I should get minutes over this guy. If Gordon Hayward's out there producing and doing these things, then I think guys who might have seen, oh, why am I not getting minutes over that guy? If you see Gordon Hayward out there averaging 15, 17, 19 points a game down the stretch, you can say, all right, well, now I get it. And that makes them a little bit more likely to kind of accept their roles, and it just kind of settles things down a little bit. So I think him returning to form would be obviously a very big thing.
His health is the most important aspect of the rest of this Celtics season. That's it. If they can get Hayward playing at a high level in the playoffs, that is such a critical component, because he gives them another playmaker, he gives them another shooter, he gives them another switchy defender. He helps them in all the ways we talked about since they signed him 2 years ago, and it just hasn't happened consistently yet. He's had good games. The Sixers game, probably his best game against a good team this season. He followed that up by getting to the hoop with physicality against Detroit, and he's obviously playing with more confidence, more force. And if he can, he has 2 months before the playoffs to keep getting better and better. And the Celtics need him to be good when it matters.
It's so important for depth. Like the Celtics, you look, all this very, very dumb Kyrie Irving talk has brought up the numbers where the Celtics when he's not on the court. But if they can have anything approaching like Gordon Hayward star level, and you can kind of stagnate the minutes between him and Kyrie, and just like, if there's less of a drop off and you don't have to rely on Kyrie, like they're so much deeper than every other team. The thing about the Sixers is the Sixers have like probably the best starting lineup, but they don't have a bench. The Bucks bench is not great. I mean, Brogdon has done some great things, but it's not amazing. Toronto's basically traded away its entire bench. And like, I know Gasol is coming off the bench now, and like, I don't think Jeremy Lin's going to move the needle that much. It just makes it so there's no drop off whatsoever. It makes the depth is going to be this. If the Celtics do make a deep run, I think it's going to be because they have like the deepest roster 1 through 8, even 1 through 9 with Baines.
Do you guys want to hear the most promising stat for the Celtics right now?
Yes,
please.
Gordon Hayward's net rating over the last 15 games, or the Celtics net rating with him on the court, 10.8.
Sheesh.
Very encouraging.
Their depth has started to round into the advantage that everyone thought it would be heading into the season. And the biggest difference, I think, for him is, you know, he's so great at navigating pick and rolls and finding guys. The play the pass that he made to find Marcus Morris toward the end of the Pistons game, like cross court, out of the pick and roll.
Found he's the only guy on the team who can make that pass, the cross court pass.
Marcus Smart sometimes, but he's just a different type of passer than most of the guys on the Celtics roster. When he puts pressure going to the rim, it just opens up so much for everybody else. And teams haven't had to play him as a scoring threat this year. They just haven't. He's pulled up for mid-ranges. He's had awkward takes to the hoop. It just hasn't been – teams haven't had to guard him like a key guy. They've been able to kind of play him like just a regular Joe Schmo. And if he's putting intense pressure all the time, it's just it opens up things for everybody else. It makes it so that the Celtics can attack weak links on other teams like Mirotić. If they play Mirotić on Hayward, Hayward has to go at him. Hayward has to turn that into a big Celtics advantage. And he's starting to round into that type of guy again. And that's a huge, huge deal.
Yep. The return from injury, it's taken a long time. It's starting to kind of show the fruits of his efforts, his work. I think the one thing that I've seen recently is that he has switched from driving with the intent to pass to driving with the intent to score. And driving with the intent to score opens up the passing. And so I think Gordon Hayward's ability to do that is very important for the Celtics and very important for their chances in the playoffs. At Danny Breakdown, continuing just a quick Gordon Hayward thing here. Do you think the best possible starting lineup includes Gordon Hayward? If so, what do you see? What do you need to see from him to know he's ready to move back into it? We talked a little bit about the back end of that, but I think I like the starting lineup. And I understand that Gordon Hayward eventually would be a starter quality player and maybe next season. But as I've been saying in the podcast, right now, the starting lineup works. Eventually, maybe I can see him moving into the starting lineup. I like him starting second halves and changing up the look in the third quarter and changing up the attitude in the third quarter. But that's more of a regular season thing. I think in the playoffs, that'll change a little bit. But for now, I'm perfectly willing to ride what works. But I'm happy to look at Hayward in the starting lineup. Part of what I think works off the bench, though, is just his ability to be the ball handler. And Hayward as the ball handler does incorporate a few of the things that he used to do in Utah and what makes him so good. And so getting him, like, he works very well off the ball, but getting him as a ball handler behind Kyrie Irving, especially right now, I think I'm perfectly happy to have that continue and to have him and Jaylen Brown coming off the bench. I just like that dynamic. Okay, moving on. No one else is going
to
chime in.
I was waiting for the great Jay King to chime in.
Nope. All right, move on.
I got a take on it. I got a take.
Take. Go ahead. Take.
It's
go.
Not who starts. It's who finishes. And I think he... I think you're right with the bench starter, but he absolutely, if like the Celtics are going to be good, he has to be one of the guys on the court, like in the final moments of the game, just for his shooting alone. Like the Bucks give up the most three pointers or the second most three pointers in the league. Like they need to be able to basically have five shooters on the floor at all times if they're going to like want to score in the playoffs. And that means maybe you can't rely on Marcus Smart. I don't know. I mean, we'll let Jay King determine if Marcus Smart's shooting is real. But Hayward absolutely needs to be on the court because I don't know if you can trust Smart.
Okay, let's get to, because we brought this question up last night in the podcast. Now we're going to ask it directly to Jay King. Jay, important question from Michaela at Title City Boston. After missing 20 straight threes, then making four in a row, does the Jay King believe Smart's three-point shooting is for real?
As I've said all season long.
Yeah, I knew this was coming.
He needs to prove it to me. He just missed 20 in a row, guys.
That's
isn't
a good
that
point.
Exactly what I said?
Literally no, just missed 20 in a row. And yes, he responded with a flurry of makes. Marcus Smart is very capable of putting together a flurry of makes. He always has been. I'm not surprised that I've taken heat for being skeptical of Marcus Smart because it's coming from morons like you guys.
Smart is beloved. Jam Smart is beloved.
But yes, it is right to be skeptical of Marcus Smart's shooting.
Is it bad enough that you like can't play him down the stretch? Like
no,
would you go
no,
that
it
far?
Never has been because Marcus Smart does so many other things that he tends to make up for it. But and if he's at 36%, which he's been so far this season, I think that's good enough. But then again, like if he goes through an 0-for-20 stretch, that could be killer in the playoffs. Like if he goes 0-for-8 in one game, like he did against Philly, that could lose a critical game for the Celtics.
But so in Philly, he also played amazing defense on JJ Redick. So I kind of agree with
you. He did. His shooting consistency though is important for them moving forward because if he has to be guarded, or if he's just killing a defense that tries not to guard him, then that's important. So Smart, that's another swing factor. We've talked about a lot of swing factors. That's one of them. But he's yep. good anyway. Like he's really good anyway at kind of deal. He's spent years dealing with defenses that sag off him and cutting and passing. He's become really good at all those things. So he can handle it if they provide help off him. But his shooting. Another big deal. Lots of big deals in the East this year.
All right, let's rapid fire this because I feel like the junk question is going to take a while. So let's rapid fire the last four questions here, okay? It's Jake Harrison at JRE207. In the spirit of Valentine's Day and All-Star Weekend, everyone finds themselves falling in love with a player willing to trade everything they think, thinking they'll be an All-Star generational talent. Who's your biggest heartbreak flop? Mine is Greg Oden. Who is your biggest heartbreak, like the guy you thought for sure he would be good? You're like, oh, man, it breaks my heart that he's bad. RJ Hunter. RJ Hunter is mine. I thought for sure he was going to be a role player on this Celtics team for a long time. I thought his shot was going to be critical, and it just never worked out. He's back on a two-way contract, but I thought for sure – that RJ Hunter was going to be good. He's a good personality. I thought he was fun. And so it does, it kind of sort of breaks my heart to see that he has not only caught on with the Celtics, but not just not caught on in the NBA. Anyone else? Jam.
No. Pass.
Okay. Pass. Pass? Jeez.
I'm trying to think.
Jam. Probably. I don't regret it falling in love.
God.
Jahlil Okafor for me, probably.
Okay.
He's played pretty well. No, don't dismiss me like that. What the hell? I mean, yours was RJ Hunter.
Yeah, and I owned it. And I owned it.
And I'm owning my Jahlil Okafor. I thought for sure that guy was gonna be an absolute monster. And he just couldn't quite keep up with the shifting offenses. But he's having a resurgence. Watch out for the Jahlil resurgence.
Yeah, I don't think so. At Title City Boston, what seed do you believe the Celtics are likely to end up in considering their tough schedule post-break? I'll say they end up in the third seed.
Three. Jay.
Sam, three. Jay.
Four.
Four.
Yep. Always the pessimist.
Yeah, he really is. He really is pessimist. You think the Sixers are going to end up? Okay, maybe. Sure. Okay.
Might be the Pacers. They keep winning.
The Sixers don't have too tough a schedule left. They just loaded up. And, yeah, so it's going to be Sixers 3, Celtics 4, Pacers 5.
But, okay. Okie doke. At that Vlad guy, were there any noticeable Brad Stevens in-game coaching changes in the past two games versus the two losses against the LA teams? Not really. The only thing I noticed in the Pistons game was just changing how he brought Al Horford in later in the third quarter. He just sat him out a little bit longer. And I noticed that he sat Jason Tatum when he had a couple of really bad turnovers in the fourth quarter. But other than that, I think he's pretty much stuck to his guns.
And he yanked Marcus Smart for that wild lefty pass that slammed off the basket stanchion.
Right. Okay.
So Brad might have a quicker trigger to the yank now. A
little bit. Okay.
He probably did way more stuff that we don't even know about.
Maybe. It's very possible.
Told his team.
What if he was just like, change this defense? And we were like, oh, we didn't even notice that. I bet he did some things. I have faith in Brad that he probably did some coaching.
At MBurns 37, what does Tatum need to learn to improve his offensive game? I think the next step for Tatum, I mean, there are a lot of things that he just needs to evolve. He's starting to drive more. He's starting to search for fouls more. Those things are good. I'm going to kind of go back to what I said in the last podcast. I think his recognition of defenses is the next step in his progression. If he can start to learn how to read how defenses are reacting to his drives, like, it's great that he's putting his head down and that he's driving more. So that's step one. But the next thing he needs to learn is, where's the help coming from? Where's the secondary help coming from? Where's that second line? What that person is doing, and who's open because of that. And I think once he starts to recognize that, then you'll start to see him learn where to pass and when to shoot and when to pull up and when to keep going and search for fouls. So being able to read the defense is, I think, the next step in his progression. Anyone else?
I think he needs to be able to dribble the basketball and then take the basketball from dribbling to layup. The guy can't. It's just
his dribbling's not sometimes. Good. Not great. It's not great. Jay, anything?
I got nothing for you.
Great.
I'm not gonna lie. I just received a text. I went to check it. I lost track of the conversation, and then boom, you called on me. It was like college all over again. Like,
yes.
Just I'm spacing out, Teach. Don't call on me.
Okay, so I'll just then move on and say we'll be right back on the Lockdown Celtics Pack podcast with the Rain and Junk hashtag. It's what you've been waiting for. All right, we'll be right back. All right, that's been serious stuff. This segment now turns to Sam Packard. It's the Rain and Junk hashtag. Go for it.
All right. We are recording on Valentine's Day. So in celebration of Valentine's Day, we have two poems written by the listener gods. The first one is from Jack O'Bram. Not surprising, they're both odes to Marcus Smart. This is from Jack O'Bram. Roses are red. Here is my heart. I won't give up on you like a loose ball to Marcus Smart.
Okay.
I like it. All right. I like
this
it.
One is, this one's way love. Better from Rico Dynamite at John T 4573. Roses are red. Violets are blue. Marcus Smart's shooting is not elite, but we still love him. That's a poem. That's the type of thing. Most people will tell you, no, a poem should rhyme. This guy freeformed it. Yep. Complete. That's fantastic. Shouts to Rico Dynamite for expressing what we all believed.
I like it. I like it. Any poems, Jay?
No, but I almost just made a terrible joke. And
go on.
And yeah. I was gonna say, you know, like a haiku. I was gonna say that was a smarf coup, and then I held myself back.
Yeah, it's
a smarf
good.
Coup.
Smarf coup.
Yeah, doesn't make any
good.
Sense.
Yeah, that's why I held it back. But then I had
a terrible joke. All right. Yeah,
I had to share just how terrible my mind is so that the people know that I'm shielding them from awful things.
Jay King, bring it.
Oh, thank you for that.
Another heroic moment from the kid.
He's full of them. At Joey Angus. This is not even a question. It's just a statement. It's clear that Al Horford has been playing so dominant the past couple of games because he represents CM now. The people got to see that CM makes you strong and tough, like Al. Hashtag raining junk. Hashtag cauliflower nostrils.
Cauliflower nostrils. Jeez.
Well, see, that is in reference to an emoji. I stumbled on a conspiracy after the Sixers game.
The emoji, yes. Okay.
Okay, yeah. So you know the emoji that looks like there's two cauliflowers coming out of your nostrils.
Yes.
Ben Simmons has been tweeting that a bunch recently, like during the game. And then on Instagram, there was the Celtics put up a highlight of that Tatum dunk on Ben Simmons, and then Semi Ojale, Je suis l'amour, and Al Horford responded with the cauliflower nostrils emoji. So I thought it was a shot at Ben Simmons. I tried to stir up some NBA drama, but no one was Midley. No one would say. No one would go for it.
I think it was. I think you were right, though. I'm on your side, Jam.
I don't know what that emoji is supposed to mean. I don't know what it's supposed to mean.
It's anger. It's frustration, I guess, or like intensity. Like you're breathing hard, but like that's a Ben Simmons emoji.
Yeah, I don't follow Ben Simmons enough to know.
When you steal a man's emoji, that's
it's like stealing his soul.
That's true vengeance.
It's like ripping into his chest and pulling his still beating heart out, stealing his emoji.
But we got very distracted from the fact that CM is powering Al Horford
to the
future. All right, here's my question. J. King, do you have any idea what CM means?
Chocolate milk, baby.
Oh, Jake up on this internet.
That was surprising.
I would have thought there was zero chance that you think I didn't see listen to the podcast ad? Last night.
You think I didn't see his ad? Of course I saw his ad.
Yeah, that's true.
I know you focused in on the CM part.
I just didn't think you listened to the podcast, which I'm sure you didn't. But
I did not listen to the podcast, but but I did hear that you guys were discussing what it's like to watch a game next to
Mr. Chatterbox, vocal J. King.
Oh, ooh, that is perfect for the next question from Leo DeAndre B. We got to hear all about what a game is like sitting next to the kid. But for Jay, what's a game like sitting next to Samuel Jamison Packard III?
So the first thing I did when I saw Sam sitting next to me is I threatened him because it would have been an empty seat otherwise. And I wanted space. So he wanted
more leg room. He literally threatened and he said, I'm going to kick you out of here. Leave now.
This is true. But then I told him that because he's my beloved podcast host, I'd make an exception and let him stay. And then I put him through just hell.
No. It was fantastic. Normally I sit like a couple rows back or up on the third row. And no one's talking. I like the constant chatter. It was way more entertaining.
Well, I'm glad I could do it for the people, and it was great. It was great to have you next to me in the end, despite the lack of room that your presence provided.
Yeah, but like, did I make any good jokes? Did I say anything cool? Anything there memorable?
There was literally nothing memorable about sitting next to you.
Nice, fantastic, cool.
But watching Thon Maker was awesome.
I told you guys, that guy loves Thon.
Oh, boy. Okay, next.
Moving on. This is a random question, but I like that it was super random. From Tristan Bird, Friends or The Office?
Oh, The Office.
This is an easy question, The Office, because Friends is a garbage show, but yeah. Who's comparing those
and Ross,
two?
And Ross is like the worst character in television history. So The Office for sure, like by a mile.
This is the first time I was ever embarrassed by the listener gods. And maybe he
no,
just...
I respect it because most of the listener gods are like, who would win in a wrestling match? And we've like talked about how Smarf would win every time. I like this was so far out of left field.
It was out of left field, but don't throw Friends in there.
Alter it. What is your favorite sitcom? Not The Simpsons does not count. We're talking sitcom. What is your favorite? If it's not Friends, I don't. The Office is not mine, but I'm excited to hear yours.
So The Office, I didn't watch The Office. You guys will probably believe this very much. I didn't watch it until I think I watched it this summer for the first time. With me, it's like the more people hype something up, the less I want to watch it. I don't know why that is.
Oh, you're a contrarian? You're a contrarian? You kind of go against that? That doesn't sound anything at all. You're defiant?
I'm not surprised. I'm a rebellious alpha, is how I would say. So The Office is up there. What else? How I Met Your Mother is actually, I like that. I'm a How I Met. I realize that could be a controversial take in some corners.
You Big Bang Theory.
How I Met Your Mother is not a bad show, but to make it your number two mention is trash.
So I don't watch comedies. I'm not a funny type of guy.
He's a serious guy.
Like, give me The Wire. Give me Friday Night Lights. Give me
Friday Night Lights. That's
give
serious.
Me Boy Meets World. Give me Game of Thrones.
Boy Meets World.
Boy Meets World at its heart was a
the
comedy.
Serious, hard-hitting drama of Boy Meets World.
Then Boy Meets World is number one. But Boy Meets World is far, far more than a comedy. Boy Meets World, I have a shirt that says, "Everything I learned in life was taught to me by Mr. Feeney."
That means you have a poor infrastructure in your life, because that's a television show.
Yeah, but Mr. Feeney's a god.
Okay.
How about like Parks and Rec or 30 Rock? 30 Rock was going to be my answer.
30 Rock is great. 30 Rock
is Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Trash.
Oh my God, Jake King, you are
also
dumb.
Also whoa, trash. It's always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Shut the
horrific.
Fuck up. Shut horrific. The fuck up. Shut the fuck up.
Jay, you're just being rebellious for the sake of rebellion.
No, that's
you're just
a dumb
watching
show.
The world
that's
burn.
Terrible. That's terrible. It's a
that's
horrible
a dumb
take.
Show.
That's your worst take yet. It's your worst take yet.
Dumb
Only
show.
Sunny is one of the best shows I've ever watched.
Yeah, so is 30 Rock.
It's awesome.
30 Rock
when...
is great. Arrested Development. You ever watch Arrested Development?
No, it's
Arrested
smart
Development is an elite show. I will admit to that.
How do you like Arrested Development? How do you call Arrested Development elite? And then Always Sunny like trash.
That's, Jay, have you watched It's Always Sunny?
Right in the same genre.
So I watched four episodes, I believe, of Always Sunny, and probably four seasons rather. Just because everyone said it was great and that I should watch it, and I tried to make myself like it, and I probably laughed two times in four seasons.
Four seasons, and you laughed twice?
Yeah, I laughed like much harder watching Thon Maker play basketball than I did watching that garbage.
That's one of the most shocking things you said, and I don't believe that you watched the second of it. It's not possible to have watched that much Always Sunny and not laugh if you think that Arrested Development is an elite show. Like, I just don't get it. Doesn't make sense. Doesn't compute.
One
it's
is
like,
very
it's like,
well written.
It's like saying Kyrie Irving
characters are all funny.
Are better with Kyrie. Oh. Terrible. Trash, trash, trash. Your worst take yet.
It's really just not good. I also want to just give a shout out to Brooklyn Nine-Nine because I also like that program. But moving on, Stefan Gottwald at SteveSun33. Is there anything worse than Players Only? Now, you guys were both at the game for Players Only on Tuesday night, but I actually tweeted much before the game, like, can't wait to complain about Players Only, but C-Web wasn't on the play-by-play, and that improved things dramatically. And then Kevin McHale opened the game by calling someone a dickhead on a hot mic. And I didn't think Players Only was that bad. I thought it has its really terrible moments, but at least on Tuesday night wasn't too bad.
There is something worse than Players Only. Jay King's take on Arrested Development or Always Sunny. That's
I would like
worse.
To hear Jay King call a game.
It would be an electric show.
I there's a lot of words I'd use to describe you, Jay, but electric is not one of them.
Would you admit that following along the game with me was electric?
I think there would be a lot of amazing moments, but I can't imagine you like bringing the energy level. Like, if in a close game, would you get hyped? Although now I'm thinking back, you were pretty hyped for Thon Maker, but could you bring that to the stage? I don't know how much of a performer you are, Jay King.
Nothing brings me more joy than watching basketball. So I would bring all tight. I'd be like Tony Romo in this bitch.
Predicting plays?
Yeah. But more so Romo's enthusiasm. The guy, he likes nothing more than he likes just X's and O's. And I'm just like that, except with Thon Maker long balls.
I mean, I did really hype up sitting next to Jay King during a game, and I can't disagree. The guy was talking constantly. I did sit next to Jay King doing color commentary for a game, and it was fantastic. So you have to reverse my opinion on this and say I fully support it you should replace Cedric Maxwell. Actually, I can't even say that because Cedric Maxwell is so cool. But
Maxwell's a legend. No, nobody wants me to do color commentary.
Yeah, no, probably. You're right.
What do we got next?
Oh, I forgot I was in charge of questions. Moving on. This is from Ed Tweet Celtics, but his name is Fuck You 3. Which Celtics do you think would give out Valentine's cards to the team? And then he has a very interesting follow-up question, but I'll let you guys answer that one first.
Yabu. Yabu, for sure.
He's got a big heart.
He's a very caring guy. I think Kyrie would, but the Valentine's would also contain some sort of like obscure philosophy as well.
They'd all come in a book.
Yeah. It'd be like one of those little tiny kind of like mini books that you get at a bookstore as you're checking out. It's like, oh, philosophy for, you know, millennials or something like crazy. And he would just kind of put that in there. So, but Yabu for sure. Yabu would hand out Valentine's for sure. Like legit Valentine's too.
I think it's Marcus Morris. He got the whole team cheesesteaks. I mean, that's basically a metaphor for a Valentine.
It is. I think Marcus Smart. Marcus Smart, I think, was, you know, he's a very loving guy. He just tweeted out how much he loves Boston. I think there's a sentimental side to him. I think he would do that.
I'm just waiting for you guys to name everyone on the roster, and so that everyone will know that the Celtics are big Valentine's Day guys.
No, I don't think everyone on the roster would do that.
Okay, let's say who wouldn't. I don't think Tatum would. I don't think Juice would.
Rozier would not.
Oh, I don't know. He might. It's actually just a pointless exercise because I have no idea. I don't think they're getting anyone on the roster is giving anyone on the team Valentine's. That'd be a dramatic move.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, let's move on to a better question. Which Celtic is due for a baby in 9 months? So basically, this guy wants you to ask, which guy's having sex right now?
This is a ludicrous
Yabu.
This is the most ludicrous question.
Yabu's a French, like Yabu's probably having sex all the time.
I presume that they're all professional basketball players, and they all are, so I can't choose which one's having more sex than the other ones.
Always choose the French guy.
Let's end this conversation here. Next question.
All right. To John and Jam, who is your NBA player, Valentine? We already know Jay King's is Thon Maker. So I guess I'm going to say, who's your favorite NBA player? Well, not on the Celtics. Who's the guy whose game you're most excited to watch?
First of all, I
want to
clarify the Thon Maker thing.
You love Thon Maker.
No. I love the experience of watching Thon Maker because it was a roller coaster, because you never know what's going to happen, because he might make a three-pointer and then do the money dance, or he might just fumble the ball out of bounds three straight times and leave his coach shaking his head on the sideline. That's why I enjoy watching Thon Maker. Thon Maker is not among the players I would want on my team if I were to build a roster. Thon Maker is very, very far from that. So I just want to clarify that the Jay King All-Stars would... There are two different teams. One is like the Wild Ride team, and Thon Maker would be on that for sure. But the other is the winning team, and guys that I enjoy watching for actual basketball purposes. And that would be like Fred VanVleet and JJ Redick and other of that ilk.
Yeah, so,
Maurice Spates.
Mo Spates would be alongside Thon Maker for sure.
Okay.
Mo Spates was a Jay King Wild Ride All-Star.
I know I got my balls busted for Kevin Knox, but mine goes to a Montrezl Harrell. Like, Montrezl Harrell's like my favorite player in the league right now. Like, he's just a badass, man. He's cool. He busts his ass. He plays hard. Like, how can you not love Montrezl Harrell? So that's my Valentine guy.
This is kind of a wild card, but I'm just a big Klay Thompson fan. That guy can shoot the hell out of the ball, and he's just as zero expression on his face. He looks like a half-drawn police sketch. It's fantastic.
And he has a very cool dog.
Yeah, and he's like, I'm pretty sure he's high 50% of the time. Moving on. This is from Commodore Matt Decker. This is a classic question. I'm going to change it a bit because I don't think the numbers are fair. But the original question was, who would you rather fight, one Boban-sized Smurf or 100 Smurf-sized Bobons? And I think 100 is not clearly you'd rather fight one guy than 100 because they're both grown-ass men. So I'm going to say one Boban-sized Smurf or two Smurf-sized Bobons.
I mean, yeah, Smurf-sized Bobons are still pretty big guys.
Like, that's still a big dude.
It's still like, it's not like the you're asking like, you know, one, you know, human-sized rabbit or you know, 100 rabbit-sized humans. Like, it's like Smurf is a big dude. He's like 6'4".
Can I clarify this? We're talking about fighting here?
Yeah. Would you rather fight one dude or two dudes?
I'd rather fight Boban than Smurf.
Yeah, but there's two Bobons.
I'd fight two Bobons before I fight one Smurf.
It's
no matter
Smurf
what the size.
Bobons is size.
I would
and then
fight
two Bobons.
I would fight two Boban-sized Bobons before I fight one smart-sized Smurf.
Oh, man. No, they would pick you up and turn you upside down.
No, he wouldn't. No, he's too goofy, man.
He's 8 feet tall.
It doesn't matter. That's size doesn't matter. He's too goofy. He can't grab you.
There's two of them.
Yo, John, he would strangle you by wrapping his hand along around your entire neck.
Never
and
catch
just squeeze
me. Never catch me. Never catch me.
I would fight one guy over two guys.
I love
every
that
time.
Corrales is acting like he's swift of foot right now.
Corrales is acting like he knows how to fight one guy versus two guys.
Corrales. I mean, we would die either way. But
I'd rather take my chances with two big, goofy, hard to move, like Boban size guys.
Yeah, but Boban's only going to be 6. He's only going to be 6'4", so he's not going to be as big and goofy. He's just going to be thick and jacked.
I'm not fighting Smurf in any form. It's his size, 10 sizes, half a size. I'm not fighting Marcus Smurf. I'll fight 10 Bobons before I fight one Smurf.
I'm going to fight one guy before I have to fight two guys if they're both much bigger than me.
I have no problem with that.
I'm a lover, not a fighter.
That's why you're alone on Valentine's Day. Bow!
Boom! Roasted.
Whoa!
Roasted.
Next. We're going to wrap this up soon.
I know. I'm all out of questions. I think any other things, anything you want to get off your chest, either two, we're heading into the All-Star break. It's the All-Star Spectacular. Any questions for us? Any other last statements?
Jay King is a huge All-Star game guy, so I know he has got a lot to say.
The All-Star game is the single dumbest thing that the NBA does.
Yep.
It is, except timeouts with 25.6 seconds left and your team down 11 points. Dwayne Casey should be – and right before the All-Star break, too, Dwayne Casey should have been physically assaulted for that timeout. But apparently for real, like that's something he does, and he calls it teachable moments, and he wants his team to work on things, and they – that's probably why they kept fouling with 18 seconds left, down freaking 8. You guys can probably tell I'm still a little upset that the second half of Celtics Pistons lasted 9 hours last night.
Great. Okay. So
I
that's
just had to get
podcast.
That off my chest.
That's what the forum is. That's like I'm glad everyone we're healthy now. We're heading into the All-Star break. Nothing to complain about.
Were you doing that in a way to roundabout say you had something else to say?
Oh, no.
Okay.
I was just letting Jay King know that it was a safe space and he's free to share anytime.
It's a trust tree.
Mm-hmm.
Great. I appreciate that, but now I'm feeling level-headed.
We're good? All right. So it's going to take you all weekend to listen to this podcast. We've gone a long time. So hope you enjoy it. Hope you enjoy it enough to give us a good rating and a 5-star review. Share the podcast. Spread the word. Tell everybody. Listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.
Yeah, Corrales, Packett, and Jay King. Locked On Celtics.